Good evening. My name is Herb, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to our 12 Traditions Workshop. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together proves far stronger than those forces which would divide us, if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on why we are here. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. Just to remind you, this workshop is being recorded, so my comments are going directly into the system, and I would encourage you, if you have questions or comments, to come up to the microphone so that they can be heard by everybody and also recorded. If you do not want your name on the recording, then don't give it to us. And if you don't want to be heard on the recording, don't speak. We keep it really simple here. All right. This Saturday, the House of Hope is having their talent show, and it really is a talent show of people in 12-step programs. They have been interviewed and they have been vetted. So it's not just anybody who wants to do something. It's people who literally have some talent and who had to compete for one of the 12 slots. It's October 12th, excuse me, at the Norris Theater in Palos Verdes on Saturday. Did I say that? Saturday. And it's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. No? Oh, well, there you go. I think it is Sunday. It is Sunday. Thank you. It is Sunday. Did we say that? It's Sunday. Thank you. And 2 o'clock till about 4, probably 4:30. And this is not a ticket. It's just telling you how to get a ticket if you want it. $25. There's not a bad seat in the house, actually. So they'll all be good seats. Also, I'm doing a half a day. I'm calling it a training. It's not a workshop and it's not a presentation. It's a four-hour discussion, presentation, workshop, training that I'm doing on centering prayer. And I have in the past handed out a two-sided flyer on centering prayer, which is a form of a meditation practice. It's a contemplative practice. And You may be interested in it. If you are, you could. I'll bring the flyer next week for that describes it, and then you can make up your mind as to you want to come to that. It's at in Palos Verdes at the Retreat Center. They are sponsoring it. They asked me to do this. It's for the general public. It's not geared to 12-step. It's for the general public, a training on centering prayer, an introduction to the contemplative experience, if you're interested. I'm sorry. Wow, that's a good question. Is there a fee? I didn't even know. There's a flyer, and it does say there's a $25 charge for it. Yeah, the retreat center is putting it on, and that's how that works. All right. Also, just in case you've come and you haven't received some material, we have most of it there in terms of the handouts that we've had from the beginning, other than the assignments, and I'll have a supply of those next week. But I've also been purchasing and distributing to you, to everybody, brochures. There's the 12 Traditions Illustrated, of course, which is part of the assignment. But then there's the AA Traditions, How It Developed by Bill Wilson. If you don't have it, there's a nice supply back there. And the AA Group, if you don't have it, there's a nice supply back there. So please take advantage of that, and you're welcome to take one for a friend or whatever. If you want to make a contribution for it, you can do that either through the team back there, or you can just throw it in the basket because I'm not keeping track of it. But I do like to begin with the context. Well, let's begin with the context of what are we talking about tonight, and in terms of tradition. Tradition four, short form, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Long form, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. And as a sort of a warm-up to the traditions, many places, especially in the assignments this time, there were comparisons of the steps, the appropriate step with the focused on tradition. And so I put together some notes about the comparison of the purpose of steps as related also to the purpose of the traditions. The steps are principles or guidelines for individual transformation. The traditions are principles and guidelines for group transformation and guidance. The steps are to establish and maintain unity, wholeness, and health of the individual, and the traditions were established to maintain the unity, wholeness, and health of the group. Especially step four, its general principle, underlying principle, is honesty as I perceive it. Step four, the inventory. And tradition four is about tolerance. But I don't think it's any accident that part of the discussion tonight will certainly be about group conscience, an inventory by the group. Step four is for individual responsibility, so that's the breakthrough realization that I am 100% responsible for the way I think and feel, and especially the way I behave. And tradition four is about group responsibility. Step four is, the product of it is to create independence, so that we know that we are an individual with our responsibilities in contrast to dependence on our instincts or certainly on our addiction or our false self, to keep in line with step four. And tradition four is about interdependence rather than independence. And I don't know whether the contrast is true or not, but it made a nice balance for me when I was poetically thinking about this in my cave. interdependence versus codependence, and I'm not sure that's quite true, but I like the lineup of it. We'd have to toy with that some. And both, all of them are a counter to the swing from being a dictator to being dependent. Being a dictator to being dependent. The steps are guidance for myself through God, through meditation especially. The traditions provide guidance for myself and the group, for others through God, through the group conscience. My relationship, in my meditation and in part of some of the readings I did, this came to me. My relationship with you is a direct reflection of my relationship with God. My relationship with you, meaning the world, is a direct relationship of my relationship with God. And then somebody wisely last night said, yeah, and maybe it's true, my relationship with myself is a direct reflection of my relationship with God. And I like that insight a lot. The virtue that the fourth step encourages is courage, to stand for principle and not against others. And the action is consultation with God in meditation, of course, with the steps, and consultation with others in the group conscience. So just reflections to kind of like see that these are 12 spiritual principles of the steps for the individual. These are 12 principles of the traditions, spiritual in nature, certainly for the individual as living within a group and to guide the group as a body of individuals within the group, within the body, for the health and the unity of the body, the group, as well as amongst other groups, not only in their geographical area, but then throughout the whole United States, for instance, or North America, for instance, or the world, for instance. Because that's the way the organizational structure of AA is. It's very, very organized in terms of having input from the membership to guide the leadership. And as you know, it's a servant leadership concept. All right, so any questions, comments, resistances? Okay, so we're on tradition four tonight, and let's read the article from the Language of the Heart. We won't read it, but we will look at the highlights of it. And that begins on, well, I must have moved it. Page 80, thank you. On page 80, and by the way, we have a new supply of the Language of the Heart. So if you don't have it, I encourage you to have it, not only for our work here, but also for your own use at home when you want perhaps to be looking at some of the background information. And this tradition really encourages each member to take responsibility to know something about your fellowship's history. So the paragraph on page 80 is very short, so let me just ask, are there any highlights on page 80 or 81 that somebody would like to talk about? Please, Michael. Are you going to come up? Yeah.
My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
And on 81, starting at the top, this was hilarious to me. With respect to it, but very illustrative. With respect to its own affairs, the group may make any decisions, adopt any attitudes that it likes. Moving on, for example, an AA group could, if it wished, hire a paid preacher, support him out of the proceeds of a group nightclub. Though such an absurd procedure would be miles outside our tradition, the group's right to be wrong would be held inviolate.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the key phrases that jumped out in all of the literature, the right to be wrong, and that is a legitimate process of discerning principle and guidelines. As Mark Twain said, I never learned from mistakes I never made. I never learned from mistakes I never made. No, we learn from our mistakes. Well, we do once we begin to become conscious. I know for 48 years, that is, I came in at age 43, and I was 5 years sober before I did these steps, so age 48, I never learned from my mistakes. I kept forgetting. And I forgot to remember. You know how that is. All right. So now we can learn from our mistakes. Please, Dave. Yeah, even though a group may be completely indifferent to our traditions, they have the right to do that as a group, all right? Now, inevitably, at least the theory is, and I think in practice, if they really do ignore the traditions and, in fact, they will, in fact, go out of business as a group because people won't be coming to it unless it takes on a whole nature of its own. All right? Yep. Oh, please.
Hi, my name is Ken. I'm codependent.
Ken.
With regards to this exact same passage, what I saw was a direct parallel to the constitutional right to free speech.
The constitutional right to free speech, okay. I didn't see that because I'm not that familiar with it all, but yeah, all right. Thank you. Justin, it's okay to use the microphone, but it's okay not to also.
This is just like, you know, it's like a person slipping. They start over again. You know, it's like you make a mistake, you have that lapse of maybe not doing the right thing, and you can start over again. You can change your mind.
Yeah, you can start your time over again. You actually don't start over again. I had a guy with 15 years go out, and he came back, and he was getting advice from the group that he's a newcomer, and said he needed to do the 30 days. I'm a slipper. I'm a newcomer. And he came and he talked to me, and I said, "You're not a newcomer, for God's sake. You had 15 years. You didn't lose that. You didn't lose the experience. You didn't lose the information. You lost the time count. And whether or not you announce that you've had a relapse or not, that's really up to you and your sponsor." And since I was a sponsor, I said, "You know, I prefer that you wouldn't do that. You don't need to beat yourself up or have other people beat up. They'll all know it after time anyway." All right? So I'm not in the category of people who think that humiliation is therapeutic. And he was humiliated enough, and he needed to get back on the bicycle. And he said it really changed the course, that he wasn't beginning again. He was just getting back on the bicycle and riding some more. And he didn't forget how to ride a bicycle. Yeah. All right. Let's see. An AA group need not be coerced by any human government over and above its own members. Their own experience, I'm in the middle of page 81, plus AA opinion in surrounding groups, plus God's prompting in their group conscience would be sufficient. Remember the body analogy that we talked about, the image poetically, this mythical, mystical body of humanity, having underneath it the spiritual entity, or as Bill says in the big book, the spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. Do we really believe that? Is that really relevant for us? Do we actually believe that underneath, that the life force supporting us and driving us and guiding us is this spirit, this sacred creator, this source of our life? Do we believe it? Because that's the kind of the operating principle underlying the group conscience. that underneath this sea of humanity, as dysfunctional as we are, that the Spirit can operate if we're operating in good faith. And that we can come to a spiritual conclusion about guidance and questions. That's the whole point of the group conscience here. Then he talks about the principle of consultation, which is very interesting because the meditation, of course, came from the Oxford group, and meditation in the Oxford group was, the point of it was to have guidance for the individual behavior. So he's saying here the group conscience consults amongst themselves, but in the spirit and milieu of the spirit, so that they get guidance from God, the higher power. Please, Sarah. Oh, yeah.
Source. And the way I see it is that there is, but that doesn't mean that if we, like you said, if you're operating in good faith, well, sometimes people are not acting in good faith. And so for me, that underlying spirit includes consequences. That you fall out of line.
We are taught quickly by every action has a reaction, all right? Every action has consequences. And that's where I say that you can then choose your consequences. You can do anything that you want. I mean, actually, in the world today, in Los Angeles, you can do anything that you want if you're willing to pay the price. No, really, seriously, right? But there will be consequences. And so Sarah's point is that there's an inherent discipline built into this, which Bill acknowledged about the 12 traditions, didn't he? He said, they're not rules and regulations. We don't need them. There's only two disciplines. One is God and one is alcohol. He said, if you're not going for one, you're going for the other. I mean, that's hugely confrontational to yourself. Because you have to ask, am I going for God? Because if I'm not going for God on a consistent and daily basis, I'm actually going for my addiction. Unintentionally, unconsciously, but that doesn't change the reality. If, in fact, what he says is true. Because there will be consequences. Please, Rob.
I'm Rob. I'm a compulsive eater. Overeater. One of the sentences we, about the only sentence we haven't mentioned in the first paragraph on 81, which I found really powerful, was it says that severe growing pains, which invariably follow any radical departure from a tradition, can be absolutely relied upon to bring an erring group back into line. And I emphasize, of course, the invariably and absolutely. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Again, and that is, he doesn't say probably. He doesn't say hopefully.
Yeah.
He says absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That the principle that jumped out to me is what you've already said, which is faith.
Yeah.
He's writing about complete faith in the process,
yeah.
in the higher
complete
power.
Complete faith in the process.
Just as
yeah.
for the individual, step three is turn our will and our lives completely over to God. We're not in control anymore. Here, the organization needs to turn its will completely yeah. over to higher power, yeah. and absolutely, things yeah. will be right.
Yeah. We were never in control. It was a delusion that we had any control. So step three is not turning over any control, really. It's acknowledging reality. And it's actually turning our will and our life over to the care of God. And so we're not giving our will and our life to God. God doesn't want it. Right? Well, I mean, that's sort of my take on it. But what we are saying is that as long as I am at cross purposes with universal principles, meaning I'm making decisions and choices based on self, rather than placing myself in harmony with the flow of the universe, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be consequences. Things, my life is not going to work. But when I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, and I, with a ferociously independent decision, take personal responsibility for my decision to align my will with my understanding of God's will in the third step, and then I do steps 4 through 9, which is a witness to and the evidence of that decision, my life is in line with the flow of the universe, and my life works. Now, we're constantly making decisions based on self, and that's what the 10th step is, isn't it? A spiritual axiom. Whenever I am disturbed, there is something wrong with me. Whenever I am disturbed, there is something wrong with me. I'm at cross purposes with universal principles, and step 10 is a tool that places us back in alignment with my understanding of God's will. This program, then the tools and the steps are organic and they're perfect.
I have to thank you for this very comforting set of lessons. I recently sat at a table with a group of 10 angry people. They brought documentation of the outrageous behavior in their groups. And I guess they expected me to, you know, pick up a brandish of something, you know. But I understand now, what I left them with was, if it's so bad, start your own meeting. But this is even more profound.
Yeah.
The conflict that I saw in them is one that I've experienced myself. They wanted answers now. They wanted it fixed now. And so, you know, taking the long view, I know it wasn't comforting to them. They, you know, they wanted the
right.
And to be able, yeah. It's hard for me to convey that in the fullness of time.
This room is filled with immediate gratification junkies. We don't want to wait to feel good. We want it now, and we want it full, and we want it to last. And that's why we're here, because it didn't work that way. That's just not reality. And the interesting thing about it is, if you get used to delayed gratification as a way of life, and you create a transformation through doing these steps, then you do, in fact, have a life that flourishes, and a life filled with peace, and a life of happiness, and a life of joy. Not all the time, there's speed bumps, but in the long run, it is the easier, softer way. In the short run, it's the harder way. But that's why, in fact, most people don't do the step, don't have a spiritual life. If they are, in fact, in a program of recovery, most of the people don't do the steps. And if they do, most of the people don't finish their fourth step. And if they do, most people don't finish their eighth step. And if they do, most people don't finish their ninth step. And if they do, most people don't live a daily practice of inventory and meditation and compassionate service to the people around them. It gets progressively harder and more demanding, and yet on the other side of it, it becomes so much more enjoyable. And we're restored to our, what I consider to be our true self, and we live in a sense of harmony, both with ourself and with the people about us. Please. It is great. It is self-correcting almost.
Right. And so I know of a group in our program that has like the same people that hold the same commitment for years, and everyone in the surrounding groups are really finding it frustrating and find that it goes against the tradition. But this group seems to thrive and
wonderful.
And
you see that.
So
First of all, they're not going against the traditions. All right? They have, in fact, formed a group conscience that has a way that has created a culture for them that works. They're perfectly in harmony with that tradition. They may not have rotating leadership, but that was their choice, and they have the right to do that. And it's none of the other group's business, busybodies that they are. Right. Well, and on 82, he said, on such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Our common welfare. The culture of that particular meeting is not negatively impacting the other meetings except for their not minding their own business. There you go. All right, let's George, yes.
Hi, George Brown, alcoholic. There's actually a mechanism for a group taking actions which might affect another group to consult with other groups, and that's through the general service structure, where people who have ideas about how to improve AA, how to better reach the suffering alcoholic, you know, public, you know, publicity and so on, all those great ideas that we have, there's a mechanism for proposing them and having other groups comment, consider, and sometimes they're, you know, they're agreed on. But that is a mechanism that exists.
You bet. There's a wonderful collaborative mechanism in AA as the result of the guidelines of the traditions. All right, let's go to the 12 and 12. Tradition 4 is on page 146. And it starts off with the word autonomy, and I know that's one of the assignments is to look it up. Did anybody look it up that would like to share a definition of autonomy? Please, John.
I'm John, I'm an alcoholic, self-determining.
Self-determining, all right. Anybody else have a definition that's different than that? Please.
Katie, alcoholic.
Katie. Self-law, the Latin derivatives, and also based on the Greek derivatives, meaning self, autonomous, and law, meaning self-ruling. I'm a law unto myself, autonomy. I don't have any type of supervisor.
A self-governing community.
A self-governing community. There, that would be very relevant to this topic here, please.
Rochelle, alcoholic, compulsive eater. Freedom from external control or influence, independence.
Freedom from external control, independence. Yep. Justin.
Self-directing freedom and especially moral independence.
Self-directing freedom and moral independence. And moral here, I believe, would mean values. It doesn't mean necessarily right and wrong. It means what is the value of the group. They determine the value. They determine they're not going to have rotating leadership. And yet the suggestion, and it's a good suggestion from AA, the experience is rotating leadership keeps the group really healthy. This group happens to be very healthy. I belong to a men's stag group on Wednesday night. It was my very first meeting 30 years ago. And they had, at the time, had only two secretaries. They had been in existence 45 years when I joined them. They had had two secretaries. And the only reason that the second one came into being was the first one died. And then when the second one died, we got a third one, and he was in for about 10 years. And then I did some step work, and then I did some tradition work, and then we began to have offline conversations, and now we have rotating leadership about every 6 months. Huh. All right? The group's culture really hasn't changed at all. It didn't need to be done, except I'm kind of an enthusiast about recommended suggestions and experience. So, but it was working, and it's working for them, right? Yeah. Please.
Nicole Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
I don't know about the AA literature, but I know the Al-Anon literature states that rotating leadership is part of 12-step work. And so that's why we suggest it in our leadership. It gives people that opportunity.
Yeah, that's one of the healthy sides of rotating leadership. It gives other people a chance to contribute and be of service. And it also brings a fresh perspective and a different feel to the leadership. There was another hand. Yeah, please, Les. All right, all right. Accountability, a key point in all steps and all traditions and all spirituality.
For me, the notion was, hey, you can do whatever you want, but there's a consequence. So even though we're self-governing, doesn't mean that there's no, you know, outcomes based on the decisions or the actions that we take.
All actions will have a reaction or an outcome or consequences, right? All right, are there any highlights on that page 146 that anybody would like to talk about?
Well, I relate to this. Since we are so largely a band of ego-driven individualists, children of chaos, we have defiantly played with every brand of fire, only to emerge unharmed and we think wiser. I mean, I'm certainly an ego-driven individualist, and AA has actually tamed me.
Yeah, exactly. But that phrase has always struck me. Children of chaos. I want to write that book. What a great title, huh? For ACA or adult children of alcoholics. Children of chaos. Oh, my God, that's fabulous. All right. Please, Richard. Thank you.
Children of self-generated chaos.
Well, okay, eventually that's true. Children of self-generated chaos. But if you were to peek in my house when I was 8 or 9 years old, you would have seen a lot of chaos that I was not creating. I was absolutely a victim of, and it formed my personality. If you want to read a book, I haven't read it for about 20 years, but it startled me. It's called Adult Children of Alcoholics Syndrome. Adult Children of Alcoholics Syndrome by Kritzberg, K-R-I-T-Z. And as I was reading the book, they had everything but my picture in there. No, seriously, it was a description of my personality. And I thought, oh my God, it is so universal that they're able to codify it this way in a book. I mean, that's the impact of the pressure cooker of an addiction practicing household. It creates a distinct and measurable and definable and describable personality. That's why I'm going to do some real work in this whole area of adult children of alcoholics, because I think there's a like the Claudia Black and the rest of the group that did that wonderful work in the 80s, Melody Beattie and Pia Melody, and John Bradshaw. I mean, that was a whole movement that's still there, but it was really prominent in the 80s and 90s, and I missed it because I was so busy trying to get sober and trying to get sane. But now I think there's some wonderful material there for us to learn about. Yeah, children of chaos, John.
I'm John, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
I'm going to continue where George left off because I have a little note there. These very deviations created a vast process of trial and error, which under the grace of God has brought us to where we are to stand today. Yeah. And I saw this performance over the weekend, and it had Bill in it. I see this big vast pile of all the evidence of people sending in all their problems, as he was sort of formulating some of this. And I wrote, deviants discover the lines because we cross them. You know, it's and when you go and you travel and you go to other meetings elsewhere, the great thing is that we've all crossed the same lines, right. So that there is that, the welcoming spirit or that underlying, what you were talking about earlier, that's sort of there everywhere.
Yeah. The identification, yeah, yep. All right, page 147. Please, Dave.
Yeah, the last paragraph struck me. I've been doing some work with the Midnight Mission, and it really seems like their whole setup
interesting.
Is contrary to this, because they bring the alcoholic in or the
in.
Make them go to meetings, make them take the responsibility, take them, get jobs, and work through that whole factory sort of process that they're
doing. It's a rehabilitation center.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't volunteer there if I didn't think they were awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. A group ought not to do anything which would greatly injure AA as a whole, nor ought it affiliate itself with anything or anybody else, See, that affiliation is really key also, because we cannot be connected to something that would use our name when in fact it's not AA. So we don't have AA treatment centers. We don't have AA clubs. We really don't have AA dances. All right? And you can kind of be careful there about the use of the connection. You can have, anything that you want, but you can't use the name, as Bill very clearly points out in the literature, connected to anything but the recovery program.
Soberville?
A sober dance. Oh, yeah, whatever. I don't want to do name smithing here, but Justin.
He writes it for you and says there's only two storm signals.
Yeah.
So, it's...
What are they?
The group ought not do anything which would greatly injure AA as a whole, nor affiliate itself with anything else.
That's it, yeah.
It's like a big dark cloud ahead.
Yeah. Every group has the right to be wrong. All right. Anybody want to sort of recap the story here about Rule 61, Rule 62?
Don't take yourself so seriously.
Yeah. But, it's a great story. It's a true story Bill was recapping here. You going to do it?
Can I tell my own?
Sure, of course.
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. I was secretary for a year of a 12 and 12 study book. The problem was the 12 and 12s, they kind of ran out of the room really, really quickly. So I was going to fix that. I went out and I bought 12 and 12s. And I bought a stamp at Office Max. And I put it, this is the property of this meeting. And underneath it said, do not steal. But I did put a little heart next to that. But basically I stamped viciously in every single space in this book that I could find to put that stamp. And after 12 months of running this meeting, those books did not leave. I still had all 12 of them. And I went back to the meeting 6 months later, and there was a guy, real drunk, sitting back in the back of the room. And in his share, he basically said, I don't really understand what's gone wrong with AA. And everybody kind of looked. He said, who has gone through and stamped do not steal in every spare space in this book. And when I came into the program, I was taught we should be giving this away for free. And that was the day that I did not take myself so damn seriously.
Well, that's a good story. That's a good story. We could actually debate all of that, but it's a really good story. And the story here is a really good story also. So this guy gets sober. He gets really enthusiastic about the process that he went through. He's sober a couple years, probably in a small town. He's an entrepreneur. He can raise money and he can get things done. And he gets a group of people together that follow his enthusiasm for creating a four-story structure for recovery. On the ground floor, there will be the intake, and they'll get them cleaned up. On the second floor, they'll give them a little education. And on the third floor, they'll give them a little medical help if they really need that. And on the fourth floor, they'll be helping them get resumes together and get jobs and that kind of thing. Well, and Dave's point is absolutely correct. There are some organizations that actually do some of that, or maybe even all of that today. But in this day, back in the probably the 40s when Bill was writing this book, it was his ego that was driving it, and he went to the General Service Office, or what it was called at the time, General Headquarters, and he said, this is what we're going to do. Isn't it a great idea? Can we have your approval? And they said, not on your life. You know, it's we don't think it's going to work, and we don't think it's a good idea. And this guy didn't even blink. He said, okay, well, I think it is, and it's just because of your lack of experience. And I'm going to do it anyway. And he did it, and they got going, and they were just going gangbusters. Lots of people coming in. And after a while, the people on the first floor went to the fourth floor, and the fourth floor went to the second floor, and the second floor went to the third floor. And it was all chaos, all right? And the thing blew up, absolutely blew up. But in order to try to hold it together, they had 61 rules. And after it blew up, he had enough humility to write to General Service Office with his 61 rules, and he added the 62nd rule. Don't take yourself too damn seriously. I think it's just a great story. All right, very much along your line. Please, Sarah.
I have a story of my own, too. A couple of years, I'm a secretary of a 7 a.m. meeting on Wednesdays in my program. And a couple of years ago, our World Service came up with a suggested guideline that we not have early morning meetings because there's so much to do early in the morning and stuff. And this is like a very vibrant meeting. And so what I wanted to do on our...
This is not AA General Service, by the way. Yeah, very good.
I was taking myself very
seriously. Well, but and the closing line on that page is talking about humility and humor. They do go hand in glove, humility and humor. Because when you really have a perspective, you really don't take yourself so damn seriously. Now we're going to pass the basket. You can take that seriously. Well, and I'm partly joking and partly not. We have a small group tonight, and we do have a fixed rent. So if you can just try to hit the $5 per person target, that's great. If you can't, don't worry about it. We've not missed it yet, so you're just fine. Let's go to the brochure that's the illustrated brochure. Only one side has words on it. The other side has lots of cartoons to illustrate the words. But anybody have any comments or highlights about this material in the illustrated brochure? Please, Les.
First line of the second paragraph. As always, freedom brings responsibility.
See there, that's a powerful, powerful phrase. As always, freedom brings responsibility. That's right. In my drug sampling days, my first little LSD journey, I was listening to, what was her name? Died at 28, heavy rock. Janis Joplin, oh my God. And the Blues Band or something like that. Oh. And, fabulous stuff. Even today I can think of it. But anyway, yeah, it was great. She has a phrase, I think. Freedom is nothing left to lose. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Well, whatever. Lord, I love you West Siders. And, but it came to me in meditation as I was thinking about that one day. Freedom is nothing left to defend. Think about that. How free I am when your opinion of me and your words about me are, you know, yours, and I don't take them. You don't get to define me in any way. I get to listen to you. I might learn from you, but I'm detached from you having any power to name me, because I have nothing left to defend. I mean, theoretically, but mostly practically, actually. Oh, yeah, it is. I think it is. Anyway, the local group is free to work out its own customs. That's the key here. That's the spirit of it. And it does suggest that the group take an honest inventory. The pamphlet, the group, has some descriptions of how to do that group inventory. It's a rigorous process if it's done correctly. I know there's a group in the South Bay that dedicates half a day, maybe 2 or 3 hours, once a month to group conscience. And that's outside the meeting. It's a separate meeting set up for group conscience. So, you know, only the hardy and committed ones come to that. Did I saw a hand? Mary Jo. Yeah.
I Googled both Wombly's Clapboard Duckery and Chokecam.
Oh, right. Oh, could you do this on the tape, please? All right. So we've got somebody who actually looked up some of the references in the book. I thought of doing it, but I didn't. And now I'm really interested in what you're saying.
Well,
please.
The thing that I got for the Wombleys was it's kind of...
Start the full sentence for the tape.
Okay. Then came the inevitable explosion, something like that day the boiler burst in Wombly's clapboard factory. A chill choked damp of fear and frustration fell over the group. And when I Googled Wombly's clapboard factory, there's several different, maybe 2-3 explanations about it. One is that it was sort of fictional, like just a reference to, could have been anything, like, you know, the Ace Dynamite Factory or something like that. Then there was another reference that, yes, there was a Wombly's clapboard factory where Bill grew up or, you know, lived or something. And so it was just kind of like that reference to, but it's referred to in AA history too. Mm-hmm. I know.
I don't know.
And the choke damp thing has to do with oxygen versus carbon dioxide. Like miners would die from lack of oxygen. So if there was higher carbon dioxide, that's what they would die from in the mines.
Okay.
So the choke damp is more carbon dioxide than oxygen.
So a choke damp, is that a tool or is that
no,
a condition?
No, it's the condition in the
it's
air.
It's a condition in
so
the air.
So it actually causes choking and potential death.
Yeah, yeah.
Trippy.
Yeah. Thank
anyway.
You very much. Very good. Thank you very much. All right. So any, yeah, Mitch.
Mitch, Alan, I have a question about the slogan, freedom is nothing left
to defend. Oh, it's not a slogan. I just made it up. Huh? Yeah. Defiant. Well, the way Janis Joplin said it was, yeah.
And sort of self-righteous.
Oh.
So how do you exercise that kind of freedom and truly feel free?
I am not attached to your opinion about me. And I'm not attached to your opinion about you. And I'm not attached to your actions that might be killing you. I don't.
So what stories guide you?
What stories?
Yes.
Well, I would say what principles guide me.
But I'm troubled by the...
What's troubling you? What's really the question?
I'm trying very hard to live that principle in my own life. And I don't know how to do it cleanly.
Yeah. Absolutely. I believe that.
And
yeah.
So that's what's troubling me. And
yeah.
I want to hear from you how you do it.
Yeah.
Without the attitude that I can't seem to do it.
And the attitude would be what?
You can't tell me anything about me because I already know that.
Okay, so the step work has crushed that out of me with some good therapy. All right? And my prayer life, I have to believe that my consistent practice of meditation and my consistent application of the principles of service have, in fact, like you soften abalone by beating it, right? So maybe you just need to suffer some more. Monish.
I have the same question we have.
Same answer.
I have a follow up to that, and I had an observation. I guess the follow up was when you're with people in a more professional setting, right? How do you pull that on and be respectful of it?
Sure. Oh, in a professional setting, how do you hold that principle? I don't see any difference. And be respectful. Sure. Yeah, I don't see any difference at all in a professional environment. If you don't mind if you don't look like you know everything. If you don't mind that you look like you don't know everything, then there's nothing to defend. I know what I know, and I have some experience. I'm willing to share it, and I'm willing to be wrong. And I'm willing to be inadequate in your presence. Yeah.
So on Monday, so I think for the first time ever for me, I actually got to that place.
Yeah.
Even as you have commented, I think for me it's also a follow-up of the trauma work I did last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me for me to be perfect.
Yeah.
Every mistake is kind of like a dagger for me. It's like a knife to the heart. And so any flaw you find just kind of destroys for me that self image or self esteem or just identity. And so for the first time ever in a work setting, I was like, I don't give a fuck what you think. I don't care. I know I'm good at what I do.
Yeah.
With making mistakes.
Right.
For the longest time in my life, I could not make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I could not let you make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I would hold on to your mistakes and mine and remind us all of them all the
time. I'm exhausted just listening to you. It's wonderful. Yeah.
It takes like a lifetime. I wouldn't get there.
Yeah. No, but you've worked really hard with a lot of courage and taken extra measures, really thinking and working outside of the box. Yep.
It sounds glib and easy.
Nope.
I wept in my morning meditation.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Like I have not.
Yeah.
I spent 45 minutes and I wept through most of it.
Yeah.
So it's
gratitude.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Processing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's great stuff, but if people say it glibly and make it sound, I'm going to suck them.
No. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be real spiritual. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Talk to Mitch.
I'm being an alcoholic, and I just want to comment because I am a recovering know-it-all. I've done an inventory
I'm independent in my opinion, and I don't need you to, I don't need to please you, I don't need to, it's consultation, but it's not performing for you.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting parallel to this,
yeah,
that the group can be independent, but they don't have to, you know, do what anybody else thinks they should, as long as, like, I'm not ruining my family by being,
yeah,
a know-all.
Yeah. No, it's huge, and it's very much correlated to the emotional sobriety and the spiritual sobriety that we've been talking about, certainly Dr. Alan Berger and myself in our workshops.
Thank you.
I like the cartoon here. We're not anonymous, and we're proud. Free beer at your first meeting.
Nicole Al-Anon. So I recently started working for a company again that I worked for 2.5 years ago, where I set up their entire operations. And I was asked back, and when I was working there, I had no recovery. And it's been a real interesting experience, because I was very much, I set up the entire operations of this company, so I know what they're doing. And there's a whole new crew that just came on, and I get to practice shutting up now. And it's so hard for me, because I know what they're supposed to be doing, because I created their job. But I get to sit back, and instead of telling them, I now say, thanks to Herb, how can I help you? Where can I be helpful? And it's, for me, that has released so much of the pressure,
yeah, nice,
to be it, yeah, really.
Yeah.
And I took that on before, yeah, and it just, well, I left the company.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me of the motto. You heard the motto, would you rather be right or happy?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I read it in one of these, but it came to me over this time I was preparing for this tonight. Is, would you rather be right or helpful? Think about that. Would you rather be right or helpful? That's what you're doing
it's
there.
It's totally what I'm doing. Yeah. And I work remotely. I'm the only one who's not in the office. The office is in Houston. And so I need help from them, and I get to go back and ask, yeah, for help. I have to accept humility in a new way too, because I'm not hands-on like they all are. Yeah. There's three people who replaced my job, yeah, before. And I'm really grateful for this experience just in general, because it's shown me my own recovery,
yeah,
first of all. It's really helped me communicate outside of work better, and it's given me more confidence,
yeah,
actually, like, just in general, to accept that I get to let go, and I get to turn it over, and I get to know that it's going to work, and it's going to work out, mistakes and all. Yeah. And I get to hear these people going through what I went through, trying to be so perfect.
Yeah.
And me just saying, that's okay. Nobody's perfect. And I was not the boss who said that
before.
That's
right. That's right. Thank you. So let's go to, let's take another look at question number 4, because we did look at autonomy just a little bit. But on the assignment sheet, it says, can I be independent and harmonious simultaneously? Do I accept others' rights to think and act independently? In AA, at work, in my personal relationships, significant family, friends, etc. So I'm looking for a reflection or a comment about that, or a question about that, on question number 4, and then we're going to move to question number 5, and this is what we did last night. We were able to finish all the assignments, and it was a very rich discussion. So I'm looking for one reflection from somebody on that issue question that you either wrote and you want to read, or that you just want to share your experience with it, or a summary of it. I'm assuming that you did it, but that might not be a correct assumption. Please.
I'll stay anonymous for the recording. This is something that, in reflecting about, I've spoken to my husband about. And I just asked him, because I think that's what we have, pretty much, is that we are autonomous. We don't have to be together all the time. And this month in particular, we're doing a lot of different things. But we're always with each other in spirit, and we're glad the other person is doing that. And we're going to find a time to really talk about this. Because we can see in our marriage, if it gets to be too autonomous, then there might be distance. But if it's too, I have to go
and,
with him to
and meshed.
Yeah, then it's not good either, because we're both very independent. That's what we liked about each other when we met.
Yeah. My mental image of a healthy relationship, it's got its flaws, this mental image. But it's of two separate islands that have volunteered to build a bridge between them so that there can be communication and collaboration. But they are independent islands, all right? And then the bridge is the what you're talking about, the ability.
It's trickier with money, though. It's a lot trickier with money and credit and things like that.
Sure, yeah.
There's children.
But that's about communication also and collaboration and cooperation. I went to a poet, David White. If you haven't read him, he's fabulous. W-H-Y-T-E. And he was talking about successful relationships, and he said, perhaps a successful relationship could be built on a competition of generosity. A competition of generosity. That's really cool. The next morning, my wife happened to be with me. The next morning, my wife at the breakfast table looked up at me. She said, so how competitive are you today, Herb? You're misusing what you heard. Exactly. I saw a hand, I think. No? Yeah? Okay. Well, all right. So, excellent. Let's go with that one. And we'll go now to question number 5. Do I take myself, my ideas, and what I want others to see me as too damn seriously in AA, at work, in my personal relationships? Anybody address that? And even if you didn't, if you have a thought on it now as we're talking about it based on the discussion that we've had tonight. All right, Nicole, come on.
Nicole Al-Anon.
I won't call on people a second or third time unless there's nobody else to call on. Oh, okay, I'll come back.
Do I take myself too damn seriously? Yes.
All right. We will not have a group conscience.
David, alcoholic.
Hi, David.
Al-Anon, compulsive overeater, and on and on and on.
You belong here.
Painful.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to use this at work. In every aspect of my life, especially at work, and I come up to edges, and I find it so absolutely, this principle, so absolutely imperative, because I work in a harm reduction model, housing first model, in between all three of those missions. And so I run these groups where people can come in and drink and use drugs, and you know, and that's okay. And
but the harm reduction model, you might want to explain that.
The harm reduction means that you can get housing, but because they find that it's better for Joe Taxpayer that you actually get in housing, and then you can start addressing your health problems.
No, but talk about harm reduction.
Okay, right. But the
in drinking, rather.
Drinking,
I think you're mean.
Drinking,
right?
Drugs.
So, no, you can... well, I'll do
so,
it.
So anyway, the thing is...
No, wait. They don't understand what harm reduction is.
Okay.
Harm reduction is it may be a very narrow thing, but I'm understanding in the retreatment area, harm reduction is meaning helping you drink so that you don't harm yourself or others. Harm reduction is not a treatment program. It's help you control drinking so that you don't hurt yourself or others. Now, you may have a broader context, but that's what the harm reduction model is in the medical treatment of alcohol and drugs. Let's teach you how to do it with common sense.
Well. If I can have a caveat here.
Oh yeah, please. You're the one in the business.
I believe that all spiritual development is based upon it, when it gets painful enough. So, how is your quality of life? Are you coming in for the goodies that we have in the group, or has it gotten painful enough where you're actually listening?
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for about 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm seeing people that I used to work over at one of the West Side treatment centers down on San Julian and Fifth.
Oh, of course.
It's fabulous. It is. But anyways, my point is that my clients, I have a great relationship because I don't judge them. I am just another bozo on the bus. I don't think I'm up here. That's painful. I'm not down here. I'm right here with you. I'm just with you. I'm not here to judge you at all.
Okay.
Alan Unston, great. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I had the challenge, you know, I have to work with a lot of people that have bigger and more letters behind their name. And so I, you know, sometimes we kind of butt heads a little bit because that's what people do when they think that they know more or they have to be right or whatever.
What is your point?
My point is this, that I reserve the right to be wrong.
Yeah.
Do you have the right to be wrong? And that statement.
That's your question to them.
That's my statement with my wife.
Yeah.
That I'm getting a divorce from.
Yeah.
Because I say I know that I'm not right all the time. Are you? All the time?
Yeah. Yeah. No, these are really good questions. And the point, and right at the beginning of the workshops, most workshops one day or the year long, I try to help people understand the power of the question. Because if you don't have the question, any answer you're given will fall on the ground. You need to have the right question. Then when you have some information or an answer or an experience, you can connect it to the question and you'll have an experience with it. So I'm all about framing the right question. All right, so number 6, consider if in establishing my own autonomy, I set standards for others to live by or achieve. Do I judge, criticize, character assassinate? Well, you were talking about that. Others based upon my perception of their shortcomings or not seeing the issue properly. Anybody have a reflection on that or even a reaction to it? Rob, all right.
I'll reflect and react. Rob, I will tell you that I answered this last night. I did a lot of this writing last night. And I had such a different experience yesterday versus today, I think in part of doing this work.
Wow. What was the difference?
Well, let me answer.
Yeah, please.
I'll tell you what happened.
Good.
Yeah, I will tell the story. So, yeah, I wrote, I certainly do set up very rigid standards for others. But I note that these standards reflect the rigid standards I set for myself. And that I never meet them or comply with them. And I find that I'm very, very good, but by judging others, it's a way of defending myself, right? So I don't have to see. I mean, I've read before, you know, I'm most bothered by the defects in others that really reflect my own.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing my own defects when I'm really
in psychology. It's called projection.
That word's in there. I just didn't want to read it verbatim.
There. Yeah. No. It's a classic ego defense mechanism. That's how we defend our ego, by seeing what's wrong with me in you rather than in me.
So I write, perhaps I'm being too judgmental and critical of others. Then I'm also setting unfair and unrealistic expectations for myself. Perhaps I need to respect my own right to be wrong, right? To learn and grow toward the will of my authority, higher power.
Yeah.
Autonomously and independently through trial and error.
Yeah.
So perhaps I stifle my own growth, creativity, and autonomy with my own set of standards.
Yeah.
So yesterday, I had, I suffer with procrastination at my work, and I'm often unproductive, and I think it's, for the most part, always comes out of self-centered fear of not doing it right, of not knowing how to do it right, of it not the result not being good enough. So I sit in paralysis, don't
You're
start.
Making a mistake.
If I don't start, I can't fail, right?
And by that, you fail.
Yeah. So yesterday, I had one of the least productive days in my office I've had in weeks and weeks, where I literally did nothing useful for anyone at all. It was very demoralizing. Mm. I did this. Now, this is all coincidence, right? But I did this work last night. Today, I went in and had one of those productive days I've had in weeks
wow,
and
that's
weeks,
great.
Where I was busy, you know, from open to close and got lots of stuff done and didn't... I wasn't spectatoring myself. I was just doing it.
Yep.
I was doing what needed to be done.
Yep.
Is there a connection? I don't know. I think so.
Yeah. It's a wonderful coincidence. Yeah. And you've heard the definition in the rooms of coincidence, right? And that's when God remains anonymous. Right. Please, Alex.
So what I thought was interesting in reviewing these questions, 4, 5, 6, it's as a person in CODA and codependency, these are like the heart of codependency mm-hmm. with the, do I accept others' right to think and act independently? You know, instead of trying to control what you think about me, how this feels, do I take 5, do I take myself too damn seriously? And, you know, in codependency, often people are like, oh, they're narcissistic. But there is so much narcissism in my codependence because I'm in this victim mode. And to see that self-centeredness. And then on the next one, do I judge, criticize, character assassinate? And I'm learning that that judgment of others and myself is one of the reasons for that lack of self-esteem, where I don't esteem myself properly and I judge myself and I judge others. So I was just kind of blown away that all of these questions are really hitting to the core of my recovery right now and how in my recovery I am able to have so much distance from what used to control my life, which were these.
It's interesting what you're saying and the reaction I had last night from the other group in PV was at least a half a dozen people after the workshop came up essentially saying things like you've been saying, but giving me this sense that they are getting more in this traditions workshop about their own character defects than they did in step 6 and 7 in the step workshop. That was a real, like, I've never heard that before, but I really understand it as certainly reinforced by what you just shared. Please.
Hi, Milton Al-Anon.
Milton.
So power to the question. There's in Al-Anon, we have the 3 A's, acceptance, awareness, and action. And it drives me to be aware of my actions and then take action and accept them. So and I could change it around all the time.
Sure.
Yeah, whichever one comes first.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I want to go back a little bit more to a child of chaos. I used to go to a lot of punk rock shows, and I was always in the mosh pit where people run around like crazy and smash into each other.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it was like-minded people like me.
Yeah, and they call that fun, right?
They call it fun, yeah. Right. But I just recently went a couple weeks ago, and I picked up a guy and threw him on the ground, and I actually felt bad for him. When before I would do it like crazy, and and I was like, and then after I was just standing there in the middle of it, and I'm like, what's the difference? There's something different here.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized I'm not so pissed off, I'm not so angry, I'm not so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
All the chaos in myself doing this work has gone down a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Munish.
So, I'll echo what others have said. This question are just mind-blowing for me, all of them, about, you know, do I accept others' rights to act and think independently? No. I mean, in family stuff, it's just enmeshment and control. In work stuff, it just threatens my ego.
Yeah, there's a saying in the rooms of AA anyway, easy does it. I can't stand it. See, my motto is heavy does it. Yeah, it's quite an inventory, isn't it? Yeah.
Incredible inventory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think two things. So what I talked about earlier, when I am willing to be autonomous, I think the first thing that came up instinctively was an amazing sense of freedom.
Yeah.
It's just an unbelievable sense of freedom that comes up. And I think the second thing that I think is the antidote for all this is compassion. Because every time I catch myself doing all these things, if I can't treat myself with compassion, which is really hard because I don't know how to do that, I have never seen that model and I don't know that, and I do not work in a profession that ever, ever, ever does that. But to start practicing that, because the way I treat myself is the way I treat others, and when I start being more compassionate with myself, having been completely ashamed and humiliated with my behavior doing all these things, I recognize that I'm ashamed of my behavior, I recognize that I'm humiliated by my own behavior, and then I have to have compassion, which is this whole Buddhist practice about naming it and then having compassion. And then I can hope to do it differently with others. Because as I was going through the question, I was thinking, okay, so how do you get past this? You know, I see them, I know them, I struggle intimately with them. I do the criticism of others, and I pray every day for a year that's been lifted, and I still struggle with that criticism of others and self.
Yeah.
Because it comes from.
But did you say that you're beginning to experience more compassion for yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to practice that.
Yeah.
And also to kind of reaffirm esteem and worth and value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Helps. Like just doing it myself and not doing it doesn't help, or just doing it with others and not doing it myself.
Correct. No, there's a dynamic between the self and the others. That's right.
And so I just wanted to offer that.
Yeah.
You know, a way to work with people.
Yeah. A lot of work to be done here, please. Nice and loud, please.
I'm having trouble with some of the ideology behind this projection. Is it possible that it might just be not putting blame where it's due? You know what I mean?
It is possible, of course.
I equate myself with ISIS. I mean, it just seems the projection seems like sometimes, you know.
Absolutely.
Put blame where blame's due. Absolutely.
If I judge
other people, you know, and I'm guilty of the same thing.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're right. I'm that loud now. I know. You don't tell me. But
okay.
I think sometimes projection.
Okay.
You don't?
Oh, sure, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, please.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I think that, I have three, I see myself as having three modes in relation to number seven. That do I accept and yield to informed or not to informed good conscience? Sometimes I can be very codependent and not and just go along with things because I don't want to make waves. And then other times I can be incredibly controlling and really want to get my point across. And then the third one is that I can go with the group conscious. And I think that, you know, a lot of it's my motivation. You know, the behavior might seem the same to someone when I'm being in the codependent mode versus going along, but it's what's going on inside of me internally and my motivation.
Absolutely.
And I know that when I'm going along with the group conscience from my, you know, because that's what the group conscience is
Spiritual fitness?
Yeah, like where I am in connection with my connection with my higher power. And one of my tests in my head is when people are saying the Lord's Prayer, if I will say it along with the group, or if I will stand there and just not say it, that's like one of my tests of, am I like going along with the group's conscience, or am I in, you know, my will and my whatever?
Defiance.
Yes, defiance, exactly. Well, it's not necessarily defiance, it's just
defiance. Yes, it is. You call it what you want, I'll call it what I want. Just having fun. Yeah, right. Yeah, all right, thank you. Okay, so we did now venture into this question number 7. Oh, we have about 3 minutes. Do I accept and yield to informed or not so informed group conscience? But let's take a look at the final question here. And you look at the grapevine list. The checklist is a bunch of questions also. All right, we hardly ever will get to that, but maybe next time. What is the primary principle under this tradition? What is the primary principle under this tradition? Anybody have any reflection on that? Please, George.
Autonomy with interdependence.
Yeah, I love the word interdependence. All right, independent is the process of the step work, where we really see ourselves as fully responsible. But interdependence, I believe, is the outcome of the traditions work, where we really see that we're intricately, if that's a word. Yeah, well, very intricately, too. We're really connected, like a network amongst ourselves. Yeah, intricately, something like that. Yeah, Jan?
Less ego, more harmony.
Less ego, more harmony. Yeah, about that.
Think before you act and run your great ideas past others.
Think before you act, that's that pause, and run your great ideas to others. What'd you say? Past others, like sponsors or friends or that kind of thing. Please, Nicole. Yeah, as long as it's inventory for a productive reason and not sitting back just judging their clothes or their diction. Yeah.
Humility
would be probably under every one of these spiritual principles, exactly, because I think that's about the truth and it's about perspective. And I do have the principles list of the traditions, and there I had autonomy, which is the antidote to the moral dependency, the group weakness and the individual weakness, and it produces the moral interdependency in the sense of the step principle, step 4's courage, and then in terms of the spiritual substance of anonymity as a sacrifice, what are we sacrificing in each of the traditions? In tradition 4, we give up human authority, that is our individual authority, in favor of group conscience or God's voice or what do I have here? Higher power's voice. Okay. Any other quick comments or reflections? All right, well, you know the drill. We're going on to tradition 5. And if you need, once again, those pamphlets or Language of the Heart, I did buy, I actually have a large supply of them. And I am going to return them to central office within the next couple of weeks. So if you're thinking about getting it and you don't have the money, just get it and pay us later. All right? That's true of all my stuff back there. You know that. All right. So our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united. For on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there. And for that, we are responsible. After a moment of silence, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. Thank you. See you next week. Yeah.